As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
On today's episode of The Glue Guys, we are going to kind of do a pre-All-Star...
Just a check-in. What do you call it?
A check-in.
You're checking in.
We're going to do a segment called... Things we've learned about this team so far this year. Wow. And we're going to look at Spencer Dinwiddie's salary and what the Nets could get using Spencer Dinwiddie's salary. So we're going to trade Spencer Dinwiddie directly on this pod.
Hey.
Welcome back to The Glue Guys. This is Mike here, say
hello,
Brian.
Hello.
Check us out on Twitter at BKGlueGuysNetsDaily.com. The Athletic. Get yourself behind that paywall. TheAthletic.com/GlueGuys. Brian?
Have you noticed there's a sort of a nice little sweet spot when you have just that first beer and a half? Just the golden baritone of the voice. Just that's where, I mean, well, this is a rare nighttime pod, Mike. So we dipped into the folks liquor cabinet.
Yeah, I now remember why I don't do nighttime pods, because
those are your drinking hours.
I had a single IPA, an 8% alcohol content.
That's a bit. That's a lot.
And a pot roast tonight, Brian.
Oh boy,
and I am.
You're barely awake. It's okay. I'll carry the load. I am ready to go. I'm fired up. I've had. Oh no. I'm feeling panicky. I don't have what it takes, Mike. Might come back.
Welcome back to The Glue Guys.
Yeah. Good intro. Nice. Fun.
Yeah. So we do have a super fun show. So we don't want to take this time as we take a pause in our season for the NBA All-Star break. And Team Durant has been picked. Kyrie Irving. Everyone can breathe easily. Kyrie Irving is on Team Durant this year. But there's a couple of big things to get to before we do this super fun segment that I like to call Things We've Learned. Which is, there's two items I'm going to talk about. And I think they're within things we've learned. There's going to be some of this discussion too. Do you want to start with Nick Claxton or Spencer Dinwiddie? Cause I think both are worthy to talk about in this moment. They are the buzziest things about this.
Yeah.
Team.
Let's go. I mean, I get the feeling that the Nick Claxton is just going to be net positive overall. And I don't know that that's true of the Spencer talk. So let's go positive. Use that. Yeah.
Nick Claxton is his debut this season is reverberating throughout the rest of the NBA, bro.
What's with the octopus like the octopus emojis? I noticed you did that.
Ian Eagle said it on the broadcast and it felt right. You know, he's very octopus-y.
Nice.
Anyways, thank you. What animal do you think Nick Claxton? Killer comparison, animals, Nets team, go. Nick Claxton is what animal?
I'm getting more like deer I mean, people, you know, use the Gazelle kind of talk a lot, but like I've kind of compared him back in a previous version of Nick Claxton. I've kind of compared him to like a sort of a fawn, you know, he's like still, he was still knobby kneed a little bit. He's grown up though. He's you know, he's not a 6-pointer buck quite yet. 6 points. Is that good? You want eight? How many points is good?
That's a good buck.
That's a good buck.
That's a real buck right there.
You take that buck down.
I watch Yellowstone. Yeah. So I'm in on that lifestyle.
Yeah. Did we talk about my favorite part of Yellowstone?
No.
The only part that I really liked was I popped in and my wife was watching it and saw a 60-something-year-old Kevin Costner, not a stunt double, the real deal, just pop over like a shoulder-high cow pen fence, just popped right over it. I was stunned.
I think we did talk about this, and it is amazing. We talked about it off air, and to recreate our conversation, I compared it to Robert De Niro stomping out someone's face.
Right.
On a sidewalk street in The Irishman, which is the opposite of Costner, because that was the saddest example of like.
The way you said it was like an old man putting on a slipper, which was a lasting memory.
Thank you. So Nick Claxton is okay. What I kind of want to get out of you, Brian, what I want to understand from your brain.
Yeah.
Is this real? Is it real?
Man.
Can we trust what we're seeing? Because what we're seeing is a super switchy, athletic, you know, obviously he does have a semi sort of advanced offensive game. Like, you know, a lot of people just think of him, most centers when they come to the league, all they do is screen and dunk. He was a guy who actually dished out assists at the University of Georgia. So he does have that. I'm not saying he's not like Dirk Nowitzki or anything. I don't know what the best comparison would be. He's not that, but he's got more to him than just average dunking the ball skills. Is it real what we're seeing? Because it's exciting what I'm seeing.
Yeah, and I don't want to veer off course immediately, but I'm going to. which is that there's another version of this simultaneously that I'm also watching out for, which is the Bruce Brown hitting like 70% of his finishes from point blank amongst the trees. And is it for real? Is all that stuff for real? Because these are the two role players who sort of emerged from where they, from the ether, you know, wherever beautiful role players, you know, emerge from. And
from Wanda's hex in WandaVision. I don't know if you're
I don't, but I get, I think I know what it means. Yeah. It's like a portal, like it comes through a portal. Like a witch portal. Through the witch hole. Comes
she's
out the witch hole.
Invented a town within her head.
Oh,
Westview, New Jersey. Come on.
I did read House of M, so I know I'm not totally. Oh,
look at you.
I know. I hit the books, Mike. But yeah, and I go back and forth, and it's like, you know, at what point is the sample size enough on Bruce Brown to be like, this is an elite finisher, a unlikely but elite finisher, who also, although the shots are contorted and quadruple clutching for no reason, they go in at a very high rate. Am I going to look at that? I mean, so that's going on meanwhile. And then Nick Claxton is like hitting these, you know, sort of pirouetting hooks and things like that at a improbably high rate for what those appear to be. It's like at the eye test. What I'm saying is they're not necessarily passing the eye test for me. So I have a hard time believing in their longevity just because I really do trust those eyeballs that I got, these special eyes. I haven't talked about my eyes.
if this is Minority Report where we have to be implanted new eyeballs, the eyeballs that I would trust the most are the ones that believe in Bruce Brown, because I do think like there's a unique thing happening with him where his close to the basket buckets are off of him being completely wide open because the defense is sucked into Kyrie Irving, James Harden, and you know previously obviously Kevin Durant, who I think he's still a member of the Brooklyn Nets. So he's getting these close to the basket buckets because he's wide open. The defenders are switching off of him.
Can I also say that sometimes they're a little bit deceptively difficult too, because he's got these like kind of, I mean, he'll hit like a baseline baby hook that's like, you know, kind of contested from 7 or 8 feet away. Maybe not that far, but like, yeah, 6 or 7 feet. And that's not a shot anyone recommends anybody takes for the most part. Like, you know, basically like a half a boarded layup at without a backboard. It's tough. That's not as easy as it sounds. Did that sound easy? I don't know.
Yeah, no.
But anyways, the thing is like the Nick Claxton thing, and I agree with you, I feel like is even less fluid. Like Bruce Brown's, I mean, he adds fluidity with every clutch. It's like with every clutch, you're adding a sort of layer of authenticity of authority, even maybe on your on your layup. Do you know that? Yeah. But then, but so that's the problem. Nick Claxton's not double clutching enough by a wide margin.
Right. And so I think the thing that I like the best about Nick Claxton is just the simple fact that, you know, so like DeAndre is not as athletic as, of course, he was. And DeAndre, what's interesting about him is like he was never like super switchy center dude. He was always, I can jump super high and block your shot. Like he wasn't just like a guy who could like switch onto anyone and had this freakish athleticism in that way. And obviously Jeff Green's not really a vertical threat. He's just sort of like a body position. Like when he plays center, that's what he does. What's been exciting about Nick Claxton is we're getting those. He's not like Jared Allen, but we're getting a little Jared Allen-y vibes where it is vertical, but it's quick. It's side to side. It's I can switch onto a guard for half a second. Right. I'm not saying he's like, you know, he's not going to stop Chris Paul or whatever point guard you want to name, but he does do something that is impressive when he switches onto a guard. So I think there's just, I like both. I love Bruce Brown. We've loved Bruce Brown forever. I mean, Brown has been Brownsville. I mean, the love, shout out Brownsville.
The love is no question. That's there for both of them. It's whether or not it's whether
it's
or not
like
it's going
to say to your yeah. kid, it's like, I will love you no matter what you do, yeah. whether you're a failure in business or a success, I will love you for whatever you do, Bruce Brown and Nick Claxton. We will embrace you.
Yeah.
Who do we believe is the better child? Who will get into Harvard?
It's Bruce.
Nick Claxton's a thing, though.
It's a thing. These are the memes.
The reason why is because he is so athletic. Like, you know, what if he plays 15 minutes? I mean, he's not the Embiid stopper, but he is the guy who, when he's playing against backup bigs, it just makes it a little bit harder for the other team to score a bucket.
Yeah.
And that's all they need.
No, he's like a very real, I mean, it's I'm trying to, what's the word that's not quite replacement, but he's like, it's like, I mean, he's not replacing what Jared Allen does yet, because that just takes a lot of reps that isn't there, but he's definitely got whatever that seed of defensive intangibility intuition is. And he also knows enough to not like shoot from anywhere other than just like point blank, which he's only done three times over, you know, in 30 shots, whatever that he's had this season. Looking at the shot chart, he knows what he's about. He knows where his bread is buttered, like, and that's from point blank, which is exactly what Jared Allen knew, and all good young centers who are playing the vertical game ultimately figure out.
All right, so let's do this. Let's hop over, because I'm going to talk a little bit more about Nick Claxton later in the show.
Oh, okay.
So we've gotten reports that Spencer Dinwiddie, the Nets are shopping Spencer Dinwiddie, or they're listening to offers about Spencer Dinwiddie. And maybe you'd ask, why would other teams want Spencer? We don't believe he'll be back this season. He may. His Instagram feed would suggest that he's on the road to recovery in a pretty strong way, but you can kind of mess around with that, and we don't really know how good he is. But why would a team want a guy who would be coming off an injury who's likely to opt out of his contract? The reason you do that is because that team would be getting Dinwiddie's bird rights, and then they could offer him, I think, like a 5-year deal at pretty much whatever amount they want, and it's basically getting a free agent within your cap. I mean, that's what bird rights do. Before we even get to let me ask you this first. Let's say the chances of Spencer Dinwiddie coming back at the end of this season for the playoffs is 5%. Okay. Would you rather have that 5% chance of Spencer Dinwiddie, or like, here are the guys, and we'll go through the list of whether you want them or not, but like J.J. Redick, Larry Nance, George Hill, Josh Richardson, Lonzo Ball, like that mix. There's a lot of different variation of that. Would you rather have the 5% chance of Spencer Dinwiddie or one of those guys, basically?
Well, where I go with this question is sort of like what's a little bit a kind of a Beatty conversation that's been going on online that I think you had a very nice response to.
A Warren Beatty conversation?
A Warren Beatty. It's about the Dick Tracy movie from the 1990s. It's still,
I had
it's
a
raging.
Dick Tracy watch. Yeah. That was a pretty
yeah,
sweet.
Heck of a watch. Pretty sweet deal. The Beatty conversation is more
Beatty. What a terrible podcast the baby conversation. Yeah, yeah.
Just a long form reviews I was trying to come up with the name of the one where he's running for president or whatever, or some politician. What is that?
Wag the Dog. Is that the movie?
No, it wasn't that. Nah, we'll come. Somebody'll chirp it.
Bushwhacker.
But no, that's
the one where there's like a conspiracy that. Is that the
people
one?
People are just like, shut. This is yeah. Just looking for the name of a movie that's frustrating. Anyways, it'll come to us. But so the Twitter conversation though is this like really
the
obnoxious. The beta conversation is this terrible, which you did a very good job of responding to. And this was like a Nick Wright tweet, but this is something that's been going on for like the last, you know, since the offseason, which is like, What are you guys here? Trump card boys. What are you going to do about Joel Embiid? Losers, game over. Chump. So, and there's a lot of like responses to that you could go with. I think it's a lame framing of an argument just because it assumes like that Embiid is this nuclear, but anyways, that they haven't been beaten in the playoffs with Joel Embiid and many other iterations. But I also think about like, okay, so what is in their version of this, which is like a one-on-one boxing match, which basketball can be, but is often not. Like who's the player that like just completely X's out Joel Embiid? Like what is the list there? Is it just like Rudy Gobert and who else? Like what are the like big post defensive names that just like are like, oh, that's the Joel Embiid stopper?
I think like there's no such thing as a Joel. There really is no such thing as a Joel.
This is my point. That's basically what I'm trying to
tee up. Right. I mean, the whole thing, like the reason why Nick Wright tweeted that was because Gobert, I mean, Embiid went off for 40 and 20 against Gobert. Right. And like, so in the 76ers won, and everyone's like so excited about them and how great they are and amazing, amazing, amazing. Yeah, there's no such thing as a beat stopper. And that's why I kind of think like this whole conversation about Andre Drummond. I want Andre Drummond on the Nets. He would be great on the Nets. Like just if you can get him for 14 minutes a game. But I remember people obsess every year. We obsess over like who's the big that would be bought out and go to a contender. And when they end up on that contender, they play like 12 minutes a game. And typically in the crunch time, they're never out there on the floor. The Nets are a little bit more unique just because there's such a lack of like DeAndre's been better, but there's still such a lack of center. I agree with you though. The Embiid stop.
And then like Nick Claxton is like sort of our, you know, it's the current short-term solution for that, you know, question right now. Like, yeah, it's just Nick Claxton. He'll just be great and we'll figure it out. And then, you know, that's that. So anyways, the whole point of that diversion there is really to be like, so if you're trading Spencer Dinwiddie, like who are you targeting? And it seems like in that list there, you know, JJ Redick with the shooting is part of it. And, you know, I get that. You know, people like Shamit when he's having an off night, or your boy Tyler Johnson, you know, those, they haven't been like, you know, permanent solutions. I don't think in anyone's mind they've had good nights and bad nights. But again, like, I don't know. I can't help but think that like that playmaking shooting would not maybe be best served with your boy Spencer Dinwiddie. I don't know. I don't know that you're trading up in a lot of these instances. And I think like while our window is pretty small for like championship winning, I think like any like championship window is, I don't know. There's something about the longevity of Spencer. He's got a very affordable contract. Like I, for one, on more than just an emotional level, and I think I am kind of clouded by emotions on this one player just because I feel just a weirdly strong connection to Spencer Dinwiddie at this point, I guess. I'd be pretty bummed to see him get traded for like a, you know, supplementary shooter, utility player. Like that doesn't feel like the destiny that he deserves at this point.
Yeah, I think that is your issue. Because like the 5% chance of Spencer Dinwiddie is worse than having George Hill. Like George Hill is like you would have George Hill. He would play basketball for you. I say 5%, 5%. But like you, more than anyone in the world, have been tied to you've always believed in Dinwiddie. You believed in his talent. You believe that he would continue to evolve into a better and better player, and he has.
I feel connected to him also because of the show too. I just feel like there's a shit, like we were there for each other at the ground floor.
We had him early on.
Yeah, and when we were all babies together.
And we talked about Dragon Ball Z, and yeah, it was a perfect.
It was very cringe. I'm sure it was incredibly cringe, but you know, we did it.
He told us to buy Bitcoin. We didn't listen, and now we have no money.
Yeah,
you know, we'd be millionaires if we listened to him.
Dumb idiots.
It would feel weird that the Nets simply just trade away Spencer Dinwiddie, so like another team could sign him to because he's going to decline his option. Shams Charania in The Athletic reported that Dinwiddie's expected to decline his option. I don't really work with Shams. We're in the same company. I don't really work with him. Dinwiddie and Shams, like I guarantee Dinwiddie texts Shams Charania. Like that knowing who Spencer Dinwiddie is, he's not the type of guy who like would let his agent have those conversations. Spencer Dinwiddie's texting Shams Charania and saying, "I'm probably gonna opt out." Yeah, this is just a guess. This isn't like please trust me. I do not talk to Shams.
Who are you talking to?
I talked to Shams. Shams told me. anyways, but it would feel weird emotionally. Mm-hmm. I'll give you that. That Dinwiddie betrayed it. Can I be the cold, calculating capitalist that I am?
Fine.
The NBA capitalist. Be. The Nets are going to trade Spencer Dinwiddie. That is the thing that they can do. I think Brian Windhorst said this on one of his pods, that the Nets are hunting for bigger fish in the trade market. I don't know what level of fish he was talking about for that. They would want a bigger fish. Spencer Dinwiddie's contract is about like $11.5 million. That's a nice chunk to throw into a trade. And if you put in, you know, like Tyler Johnson and a couple of the end of the bench guys, you get up to 15, 16 million. That's a decent player. And for another team, why would you want Spencer Dinwiddie? Well, he's either an expiring contract, so you can trade him to a team that has like a guy who's on 3 years left on his deal or something that you just want to get rid of. Or you like Spencer Dinwiddie and you believe, okay, he'll opt out, but we'll do bird rights. We'll get him on a good deal. And that's fine.
Ugh. I hate that you're right. And it just sucks, but you're right. I mean, I hate it, but you know, that's fine.
Well, here are the names. So this is kind of disappointing, but I would urge everyone to take the same exercise that we're going to take.
Okay.
Just go to Hoops Hype, go to player salaries, find Spencer Dinwiddie, which could be Command F if you have a Mac or is it Control F. I forget which one it is. Let's see. Command F is search. Look up Spencer Dinwiddie and then see everyone who's below him, essentially, right? Who's below him in the salary list. And you will see everyone the Nets could hypothetically or practically trade for in the NBA. Now, there's guys on that list, of course, that they would never. Anthony Edwards. The Wolves aren't getting up Anthony Edwards. Jason Tatum, technically, I guess, who's making less money than Spencer Dinwiddie. But for our practices, I pulled those five names that I mentioned before. Lonzo Ball, Josh Richardson, George Hill, Larry Nance, and J.J. Redick. Those, to me, fit into a certain probability, and I'll say why. Lonzo's name has been out in trade rumors like crazy. Josh Richardson, not that his name has been in trade rumors, but Dinwiddie's has been linked to Dallas before. He was linked in the offseason, and I would imagine they may still be interested right now. George Hill is on Oklahoma City Thunder. You could probably have anyone you want on the Thunder besides, you know, Lou Dort and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Larry Nance, my guy. Larry Nance is hurt, but strong forward for Cleveland, but Cleveland's completing for a playoff spot. And J.J. Redick, who was like basically completely out of the Pelicans lineup, but is now back in and actually playing minutes with Zion.
I watched can I quickly just
yeah, please.
Completely derail us? Is that going to be a problem for you?
No.
Yeah.
No. Derail.
I watched a YouTube video of J.J. Redick doing a tour of his like super dank apartment in Dumbo. And he's like obviously one of these guys who like really does know the stuff. Like, he has like – he knows the – architect who did the trim on the whatever, you know, he's like into it, you can tell. And there's a great part where he goes through this hallway and he's like, and if you look to your left, these are my wife's Salvador Dali paintings, which you could he's like you get to you can tell.
What is that?
He thinks Salvador Dali sucks, you can tell.
Jesus.
Hey, you know, he does. Salvador Dali sucks. I don't know. What do I know? But
can I just say this? I know everyone wants J.J. Redick because he does live in Brooklyn, and we all know that fact, and he has a super fun podcast. He makes no sense for the Nets besides the fact that it would be good content for the Nets to have a podcaster of J.J.'s.
Well, we don't want him around. Not, you yeah, know, he'll be get off enough our corner. Him. Yeah.
Yeah. He makes no sense. The Nets don't need – so he's shooting 36% from three this year. I guarantee that would go up if he played for the Brooklyn Nets. They don't need another shooter. Do not. Don't need another shooter. They have the greatest shooting four of all time in Harden, Kyrie, KD, and Joe Harris. J.J. Redick doesn't fit in. I mean, Landry Shamet is basically as good as J.J. Redick is at this point. And I would actually say Landry Shamet is, a, I mean, by the fact of being a way better defender, we don't need J.J. Redick. J.J. Redick feels like I don't know how to describe it, but it's like this like momentum of impracticality that continues to roll down the hill, a snowball that gets bigger and bigger only because he has this podcast and he has this apartment in Brooklyn. That's it.
Start a podcast, people. That's all I got
to
say.
JJ, let me talk to JJ for a second. JJ, if you wanted to play for the Nets, you should have signed with the Nets when you did before you signed with them with the Pelicans, okay? You could have played for the Nets. The Nets had the cap space then. I think they had the interest. And yet, you wanted to go to New Orleans and eat beignets.
Mm.
You could have been in Brooklyn eating some cheesecake.
Yeah.
Some Junior's cheesecake.
Got to tell you, Take those beignets. Those are good.
Beignets actually would be a good Nets podcast because it's spelled N-E-T-S at the end.
Oh, wow. Beignets. If there's any Louisiana-based Nets podcast.
Yeah. Well, we do have like a UK-based. There's the Scottish Nets fan.
It's
and
getting out there.
The UK Nets pod.
What do you think about the po' boy? You like those po' boys? Like a fried oyster? The fried oysters are pretty intense. What do you think of that fried oyster?
It's a sub. I don't know, like, what do we, I know there's like a whole background to calling it a po' boy. It's a sub with something different sub. On it. Yeah. What are we talking about?
We got a baguette here. It's we're fine. Doesn't care. We put some calamari on there, whatever. Who cares? Still a hero. A you got a hero on your hands.
Are you a hero guy? Is that what you call it?
No. I mean, only when there's meatballs involved.
Is there, do you think there is a Tyler hero at this point?
There's
do
got,
you think Tyler has gotten a hero?
There's got to be some Cuban sandwich restaurant that's like, you know, also got the hero.
What was the sub shop that wasn't Subway that toasted their subs back in the day?
Quiznos. Quiznos was legitimately delicious. And then at some point,
better than Subway.
At some point they like lost the plot, but it was like a spectacular for like the first year of Quiznos existence. There's a really good YouTube channel. And again, we're totally all
stop.
Of it, but called
there's
Company Man. Yeah, called Company Man, who talks about like the rise and fall of companies. He's got a really good one at Quiznos. I can't remember what happened, but they obviously didn't do great after a while.
Of that list I said, Lonzo Ball, Josh Richardson, George Hill, Larry Nance, and J.J. Redick. Larry Nance all day, every day. He can play 3-4. He's been shooting 38% from three this year. He cannot hit free throws at all.
You and this Larry Nance thing, and you're gonna banish Nick Claxton back to the bench because you're chasing this Larry Nance dragon. What is this?
I'm just saying you see the lineups of Harden, Kyrie, Durant, Joe Harris, and Larry Nance at the five in for Jeff Green. Larry Nance offers a little bit more rim protection.
Answer me this.
Yes, sir.
Is he a Joel Embiid stopper? Does he stop Joel Embiid? Does he stop? Who's stopping Joel Embiid? You think Larry Nance is stopping Joel Embiid, Mike?
Okay, I'll do that. So we talked. You referenced the tweet of which I responded to Nick Wright. But so Nick Wright did the whole like, I'm still taking the Sixers. How are the Nets going to stop? Not that Nick Wright talks like this. How are they going to stop? Joel Embiid.
Yeah, he's like
big man Joel Embiid.
Yeah, and Nick Wright is Nick Wright here.
and in my take on it all, and I will maintain this, and this is based in basketball fact, Joel Embiid can average 40 and 20, but yet the rest of the Sixers would still have to score 85 points, 86 points beat the Nets, because the Nets are going to score 125 a game on your 76ers. So you're then asking Tobias Harris and Ben Simmons to score 40 between them, 20 per night, and then getting down to Seth Curry and Danny Green and Tyrese Maxey. Like, as you keep going down the numbers, it just feels more and more like all the Nets need to do is play really good defense on Seth Curry to limit, Tobias Harris from playing well. And just don't let Ben Simmons, like, just... don't let him suddenly take over in a really strange way that's never happened in his career. That's all they have to do. But that's the whole thing.
Do you think Brook Lopez is a Joel Embiid stopper?
I think he would be enough of a Joel Embiid stopper.
I'm just thinking crazy over here.
Robin Lopez is the kind of guy that I would love the Nets to get, and I would love him to get him, but the Wizards have made a surprisingly interesting turn towards like maybe kind of threatening for the playoffs. But Robin Lopez is the archetype that we want. Big, hairy, aggressive, sharp elbows, and a little hefty. It's got some weight to him. And he would lean heavily on Joel Embiid for 16 minutes a game. That'd be worth it. And that's all you really need to do. Let's do this. Let's take a quick break. Coming back, we're going to do everything I learned about the Nets so far this year.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
And we're back, Brian. This is a fun segment. Everything I learned about the Brooklyn Nets so far this year. This is essentially, you know, maybe sort of newly discovered items about the team, players on the team, the way they play. And what's fun about this year is that there is so much to learn about the Nets. I mean, you have Durant back from injury, now injured again, Harden trade, Steve Nash's coach. There's all these new cast of characters, Bruce Brown, Nick Claxton getting some run now, Landry Shamet. We're learning things. This is a different team than years past. I'll start off. Something I learned. We've talked about this before. James Harden can play normal basketball. Okay? And I dug into the numbers a bit, Braguy. And I was expecting to see like a sort of dramatic change from his last year in Houston to this year in terms of touches. So what I looked at was like touches and dribbling and passing and time of possession, because you can break it down, time of possession per a player. I was expecting to see like dramatic numbers that I would be dying to share with everyone here on this podcast. That was not the case. There are, though, some clear numbers that are different, and there's one big one that I'll bring up. But Harden's touches per game and time of possession are actually up a little bit from his time in Houston. He's dribbling the ball slightly less per a touch. He's dribbling the ball one dribble less per touch than last year, but he's passing a lot more. In Houston, he had about 50 passes a game. In Brooklyn, he's having about 70 passes a game. And that all translates into what we're seeing. The old eye test, as you said, the Minority Report, shove these new eyeballs into my eye, let me walk around with a rope and dive into an ice-cold bath Minority Report eye test. He's passing the ball 20 times more per a game. I see that on the floor. I see him get into sets, move the ball, get the ball back, move it again, and then get it back, and then he shoots. You know, it's like there's a lot more of that as opposed to the I dribble, I stare at the rim, and then I go.
You know, it's been fun too.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I wish I had the stat in front of me, but it's something like 40% of his passes or his assists are going to Joe Harris. Like, just the Joe Harris and him connection is very, extremely real. That's a fun thing. I like that.
Joe Harris, I didn't write this down, the thing I learned about Joe Harris is an all-time shooter. Just deserves recognition for being an all-time shooter. He will go down as one of the greatest shooters in NBA history. There's no question in my mind. His evolution, because he's going to win 8 championships with these Nets teams, and he's going to go down as one of the greatest shooters of all time. Brian, give me something that you've learned. What have you figured out that maybe you didn't believe at the beginning of the season or didn't know about at the beginning of the season that you feel like I kind of understand what's happening here?
So I'm trying to think of the thesis of this point or whatever. But I you know, you'll help me workshop this a little bit.
Please.
You don't have enough on your plate.
That would assume that we don't workshop everything on the podcast.
Right. We do have a 4-hour production meeting beforehand. So this is all a facade, smoke and mirrors. We've even rehearsed this part where we're so meta. We're talking about, anyways. One of the
it's
things
like that a Joss Whedon show. Oh wait, yes. Can't say Joss Whedon anymore. Cancel culture.
Oh, did he? I can't even keep up with everyone getting canceled. I'm worried about not knowing who. It's me seeming like, you know, a sympathizer because I don't know who gets canceled because I'm just not plugged in. Anyway, so
you
I'm
can't
just,
like
it. Now I'm just I'm against liking.
Can I say Dr.
creators
Seuss
of all kinds
deserve to be? Those books deserve to be canceled. Deserved.
They were fringe. Like they were.
Yeah,
they were
no
like
one
the.
Gave a shit about those Dr. Seuss books. Anyways. Just repaint the. That I mean.
Repaint the thing.
Can I say something? Do you want to bring up the cancel culture?
You want to get crazy? Let's get
Did
crazy.
Did you ever read Lord of the Rings?
You know, like a real, like a true. Indoor kid, I did at like age, you know, 10 or between 10 and 10 and 12. Yeah, it's very slowly over the course of like 2 years. Yeah,
I mean, love Tolkien's work, but he talked about like
those are dry books. That's a dry read right there.
Like they talked about a race of people from the south who rode on elephants and had dark skin, and you're like, oh, Jesus Christ, come on.
No parallels. I've never seen that.
Yeah, it's pretty. I mean, like, so this is all that we should all rip these things out and just make them better.
Well, okay.
Anyway, so sorry.
Let's workshop this. So this is really, it's truly vague at this point, but, and it's more about like macro kind of trends again, getting just layers of stupidity on this. But, so currently the Nets are 10th in terms of points in the paint in the NBA. In previous years under Kenny Atkinson, they were always in like the top 4 or 5. Always like that was like a big part of their identity was this, like they were the drivingest team in basketball for many years. And as I look through the like entirety of the league here, there's actually this really weird sort of bell curve to wins and, this kind of, or points in the paint. So like, let me just go through the numbers. So the points in the paintiest team is Memphis, right? The least points in the paintiest team is Portland, which I guess checks out, right? You can see this. We're still the grindhouse in Memphis, grindfathering, right?
Yeah.
And
sorry. I'm looking at something else, but yes, I'm listening.
Yeah. Anyways. And then right in the middle of the curve is, you know, from 6 through 12, we have Lakers, Denver, Brooklyn, Milwaukee, Philly, you know, all the good teams who are like championship contenders. part of what I'm thinking is like, is that, and this is not necessarily just a Nets thing, this is kind of a basketball thing, but like, is the best version of a team where you're like in the top third quadrant of drives with the ability to space? And do we want to be a driving-er team in general? Because we, you know, we still do. I view us as like a perimeter heavy team, but like, you know, we do rank 10th at points in the paint. I was kind of surprised to hear that. And I'm going to assume like if there was like a logarithmic where it accounted for time, that would be very recent that that's happened because of all the Bruce Brown action and Nick Claxton and all that.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't change a single thing on offense, right?
It's like, it's really clicking. It is. Yeah, it is. We are in the sweet spot here.
I mean, not. I don't want to move too quickly on my point, but I'll kind of sub my point into this.
I mean, mine's not even a point. It's like an observation. It's like a stupid observation.
So my little point, which is actually a big point, is that like Steve Nash is a gifted coach. And I say that two things. Doesn't he deserve credit, not saying that Kyrie and Kevin Durant and James Harden, they, of course, they are the players that are all sacrificing and they're coexisting on the court and doing a beautiful job of it. But like, Steve Nash deserves an amazing amount of credit for making this work, because we've seen so many times in the history of the NBA, you know, a lot of ball handlers get on a team and it becomes like an absolute mess. And these guys, of course, two of them are champions and one of them wants to win a championship extremely badly. You know, they're all sacrificing. They're doing the thing that they want to do. But think about if we had like a Lionel Hollins type coach, how different this situation would be, you know? And I also think about like a Lionel Hollins type coach, if we were navigating that, what happened to Kyrie when he had his sabbatical earlier this year. Like, Nash is both gifted, and this is why Mark's hired him, in the personal and in the playbook, Brian. Nash definitely handled whatever happened with Kyrie and didn't seemingly step on any toes, didn't make Kyrie more upset and make him spiral out into a bigger place, and has maintained a pretty nice locker room vibe from what we can tell on the court. And he deserves credit for having Kevin Durant come back from injury, Kyrie come back from injury too, them play great together. They trade half their team to get James Harden. They all play great together. And then Kevin Durant leaves for now will be a month for his hamstring injury. And the Nets continue to be putting up numbs and winning games. That the coach deserves credit. Steve Nash, gifted coach. Mm. I learned that. That's a new thing I learned.
Are you ready for mine?
Yeah, please tell me.
Yeah. This is going to be my most bombastic take of the year. Okay. But I did want to sort of like plant an early flag in the ground and say like one of the things that I learned is like this is the year. This is the year of the Magic championship kind of, you know, narrative. This is it. Like, we're kind of living in it. Like, you know, everything is when you build the super team, there's this like sort of initial moment where you can either, you know, decide that it's super working or it super isn't. There's enough evidence right now, I think, for everyone to suggest that this is very much working and it's continuing to get better. The way that I'm sort of preparing my mind state going forward is like, remember things, build memories here, because this is it. This is the championship run. You know, it's not going to get a whole lot better than this, you know, at any point going forward. These are, you know, we have the super team, you know, that's super, you know, hot and cool, and you know, everyone's talking about us. Like, these are the years. So I'm trying to be very present, Mike. That's something that I'm really trying to focus on. Present for these games, really kind of take them in, despite the fact that we're all in our own little cubicles, you know, scattered across the city and the world or whatever. Trying as best as we can to be very present, you know, because this is what I've learned. This is the year. This is the year of the magical run.
And this being the magical year is important, because if all goes well and the Nets win the championship, the regular season won't be as much fun as this regular season, because
never again.
It'll just be, will the Nets win again?
It's literally down from here. But like, it's going to crest at the championship and then it's down. You know, you're just expecting to win it again.
Or if they don't win the championship, it becomes,
sure,
are they going to win the championship? Can they do it? I mean, they just made the super team. Can they?
Yeah.
So this is, just enjoy this. Like, that this is
the
thing to
the
know.
Window of magic, right? We're like currently in the vortex. What is it? The witch hex
you were talking about? We talked about it. It's the glory
hole. The witch hole. Yeah.
Yeah.
What was the witch thing? What does she call it? Scarlet?
The hex.
Mega hex?
Just a hex.
Do you
but
know?
But she has chaos magic, Brian.
Big recommend Mega Hex. It's a graphic novel. It's like a comedy. It's funny. You'll like it.
Sure. I'll get right on that, Brian.
Top of the to-dos.
I'll give you one more.
What, you got three?
I'll give you one more.
What the hell?
And actually, just coming off the high that we just had.
Jesus, what are you about to do? Are you sure?
I think we should be a little bit worried about Kevin Durant.
Oh, Jesus.
We don't talk about this enough. You know, we don't talk about Steve Nash being as good of a coach. I don't know. The guy's played 19 of 37 games.
Just when he's
hamstring. Brian?
I started to feel it. I have a canker sore in my mouth. I started to feel it when you started to talk. I just felt it. It gave me a pang.
I also get canker sore. So I okay. The hamstring injury will have kept him out a month. And I have a conspiracy theory that he just didn't want to play in the All-Star game. So he has decided to continue to sit out the season and will come back perfectly strong to start. But the guy's has been out a month for a hamstring injury. We should all be a little bit cautious. If he didn't have that Achilles injury that he had now, what, two seasons ago, the Nets wouldn't be doing this. They wouldn't be as cautious. But I'll say this. I like that the Nets are being this cautious. Like, I like, one, that they're, of course, in the position that they're in, that they don't have to, you know, rush Kevin Durant back. And I like that the Nets are being like, let's just, Kevin, even if you're healthy after 1 week, you're just going to keep sitting and you're just going to rest. And that's what you're going to do. I like that the Nets are doing this, but we maybe should be a little bit worried, because a month for being out of this injury, I know that there was like a new imaging scan and that's what changed everything. Just be a little cautious. We should all just be a little like aware of when Kevin Durant comes back.
That was the most smeltiest shit I've ever seen. I swear. Coming off the high of magical championship runs. Now look at you guzzling back your Miller Lite, like so pleased with yourself. just kidding.
What did you think of the Golden Globe?
I didn't watch.
Oh, shame.
I've just been watching the Sopranos again. That's all I've been doing.
Cool.
And thinking about Rigette. Thinking about those were good pies. Yeah.
The NBA All-Star Draft has happened. Kevin Durant's team has been picked. Kyrie Irving, Joel Embiid, Kawhi Leonard, Bradley Beal, Jason Tatum. The last pick in the draft, Rudy Gobert.
Yeah.
No one likes Rudy Gobert.
Do you remember when people were like, let's get Rudy Gobert instead of James Harden? Do you want to – let's get those people on the pod next time and like, pour, like dump like raw eggs on their heads or something.
It's still like –
I'm just kidding.
The Jazz were the best team in the NBA. for a pretty good stretch, and probably still technically are.
You ever watch CKY? Those like CKY movies where they antique people, they like hit them with the like baking powder or whatever in the face.
Yeah.
We should do that. We'll get them on the pod and we'll do that too.
Yeah, that's good podcasting material. Hitting people in the face.
Good visual podcast material.
As we're speaking right now, the Wizards are about to beat the Clippers. I feel like the Clippers are on this little run of,
but how about the Wiz?
This will be three in a row.
Your Wiz are kind of on a run too, Mike.
They absolutely are. Brian, thank you so much for being here.
Mike, I had a blast. Let's do it again soon. Okay.
We will talk soon. We will not review the playoff or the All-Star game, but we will talk so much more about the Nets. It's an exciting time. Trade deadline is coming up.
We're anti-All-Star on this podcast. Do you realize that?
Yeah, and I feel comfortable to be in that place.
I was that way like, you know, 10 years ago. I was anti. It's uncanny valley basketball. That's what I don't like about it. Just like, it makes me feel sad. It's like sad basketball. You know, it just feels like a Sunday, like I should be doing something more productive, you know, but here I am.
But it's a weird thing. I keep kind of always turning it on. Like, it every time there's an All-Star game, I end up turning it on for a little bit to get a taste of it. And I know last year, I don't know if you remember, people really did like it. By the way, JJ Redick, his name is Jonathan Clay Redick. So he shouldn't be named JJ.
Well, you know why? I have actually learned why they call him JJ.
Why is that?
He has twin sisters, and they would call him Jay. And so it would, you know how freakish twins are. They'll like echo each other and stuff. So it used to kind of like JJ, JJ. Freaks. Just kidding. I shouldn't joke about that. You got love twins.
Well, on that note,
love twins. like the commercial.
Jesus. Yeah. All right. Well, that's enough. It's 9:30 on the East Coast, Thursday, March 4th, and this is the podcast.
And. Tween. All right, let's get out of here, Mike.
What is that from? Is that Budweiser?
It's, yeah.
Or Coors Light?
Ah, love, you know the one.
Yeah. God bless you, bro.
God bless.
I look like a sweaty, I'll say I'm Jewish, a sweaty Jewish mess right now. My hair, I haven't cut my hair in many, many months.
the angle of the computer. I like it. The people who have stuck it out this long. This is a great lingering goodbye, you know? Big shout out to you guys. We got a special promo. So what's the promo for these guys? Stuck it out.
Can I say one more thing?
Please. We're here.
We're going to have to plan to be at Barclays for the NBA Finals, aren't we?
Like, oh, of course. Oh, we got to be balling heavily for all of that. Even if we can't get tickets, we got to do something. So, yeah, I mean, oh, join the Discord to talk about it. It's in the Twitter bio. Invitations in the Twitter bio. Mike, yeah, you're in the Discord.
I was in the Discord to tell Brian the guest that we were going to get didn't come through.
Yeah.
I was really excited for it. We still may get him, so I don't want to ruin it too much. But if you go in the Discord, you can find out who I'm talking about, which is a benefit to going in the Discord. But I've always wanted to do a podcast in right when people come out of the subway stop right before at Barclays, you know, right where there's the big loopy thing right after the subway stop. I've always wanted to do one there. You've never wanted to do it. If the Nets make the NBA Finals, we will set up a table and just do it out there in the elements.
You know what I would want to do? Instead of actually us talking, I want to go out there with a recorder and go and just like bring third people in, like one after the other, just like randos, you know, and just make it a whole, like that kind of thing. Because the whole, where it's like a whole a live audience, that's too much for me. That's a lot of pressure. And just watching us talk, I don't know. That doesn't do it for me. We're going to bring in the randos from off the, you know, the guy, like, he doesn't even have to be going to the game. They could just be getting off to, you know, go to Patsy's or whatever.
I can't wait. I can't wait to do it. Exciting year. Thank you all for listening. Go to iTunes. 5 stars. We want to have them. TheAthletic.com/glueguys. Get yourself $4 a month behind that paywall.
Wow. Hey, love that. You stuck in a little read for the last bit. Mike, we don't want to leave the show, do we? We can't get off, but we have to.
What's the best thing on TV besides The Sopranos you've seen?
This is fun. Let's just keep. This is like, you know, if they drop off, they drop off. You know, we're still making it go. I watched a little Search Party. You ever watch that?
No.
It's really good. It's really funny. I didn't think I would like it as much as I do. Quite good. Very funny. Big recommend. HBO Max has been kind of crushing it. That's where I.
HBO Max is pretty great.
That's where I've been going.
They've fantastic movies, like the sweet spot of like 80s, 90s. Dramas and comedies.
And at the same time, I feel like every time I turn on the Netflix, I'm getting a whole bunch of shit I don't want.
I'm going to get Paramount Plus.
Your money? Because I'm a dad. You're going to fork over some Skrilla?
And they have Paw Patrol.
There it is.
Which everyone on the show loves when I talk about Paw Patrol.
Yeah. So they really got you by the balls there. You got to do it. Mm-hmm. By the paws.
Well, on that note, great show. Thanks for listening.
You've been watching a lot of Paw Patrol. What have you been watching? All right.
Should watch a little.